Mascarpone cheese. 1. Wash and chop all the herbs and mix with the shallot, pimento, and cayenne pepper. Heat the olive oil in a non-stick frying pan. Add the herb mixture and cook for 1 minute, stirring constantly. Remove from the pan and reserve. 2. Beat together the eggs and water. Add the seasoning mixture, salt, and pepper. Melt the butter in the pan and add the egg herb mixture. Stir till omelet starts setting, then add the cheese. Cook for 3 to 4 minutes and serve immediately or when lukewarm. Halibut en papillote serves 4. This is another simple dish that can be prepared in advance and put in the oven as your guests enjoy the appetizer. I believe in the principle of eating fish once or twice a week, but I notice lots of unpracticed cooks are intimidated by the notion of preparing fish, especially whole, so I'm always on the lookout for quick and easy preparations. You can substitute flounder, sole, monkfish, salmon, cod, bass, or swordfish for the halibut in this recipe. The cooking time will be shorter with lighter fish, such as sole, and longer with meatier fish, such as swordfish. Ingredients: 2 teaspoons olive oil, 4 fillets of halibut, about 4 ounces each, 1/2 cup champagne, Veuve Clicquot Yellow Label Brut recommended, 8 sprigs fresh thyme, 8 thin lemon slices, 8 sprigs parsley, 2 teaspoons fennel seeds, salt and freshly ground pepper. 1. Cut 8 pieces of parchment paper or aluminum foil into squares large enough to cover each fish fillet and leave a 2-inch border all around. Lightly brush 4 squares of the paper with olive oil. Preheat the oven to 350 degrees. 2. Put each halibut fillet in the center of an oiled square and drizzle with champagne. Add 2 sprigs of thyme, 2 lemon slices, 2 parsley sprigs, and 1/2 teaspoon fennel seeds to each piece of fish. Season with salt and pepper. 3. Place the remaining parchment squares on top of the fillets and fold up the edges to form packets. Simply double folding each of the 4 sides is enough to seal each packet. Put the papillotes on a baking sheet and bake in the preheated oven for 10 to 15 minutes. 4. Serve by setting each papillote on a plate. Let your guests open their packets and spoon the juices over the fish. Voila! Drama as well as flavor. You can use dry white wine or vermouth instead of champagne. Cooked pears with cinnamon serves 4. Ingredients: 4 Bosque pears, juice of 1 lemon, 1 tablespoon sugar mixed with 1/4 teaspoon cinnamon, 2 tablespoons water or 2 tablespoons pear brandy or 2 tablespoons Muscat Baume de Venise. 1. Peel, quarter, and thinly slice each pear, one at a time, placing the slices at the bottom of a 6-inch saucepan. After the slices of each pear are layered, sprinkle some lemon juice and sugar cinnamon mixture over the slices. When you reach the 4th pear, add the water, and then end with the remaining lemon juice and sugar cinnamon mixture. 2. Cook over medium heat till boiling, and then cover and continue over a low flame until the pears are tender but not soft. Serve the pears lukewarm. I often make this dessert when we are alone and refrigerate the other 2 servings, which 2 days later I remove from the refrigerator while I make dinner and serve at room temperature with biscotti or a teaspoon of mascarpone cheese. Winter menu du jour. Breakfast: sliver of prosciutto, Grandma Louise's oatmeal with grated apple, recipe to follow, English muffin half, coffee or tea. Lunch: veal parmesan, squash, kiwi, non-caloric beverage. Dinner: soupe aux légumes de maman, recipe to follow, saumon à l'unilatéral, mâche or endive salad, grilled pineapple with honey and goat cheese, recipe to follow, glass of light red wine. Grandma Louise's oatmeal with grated apple serves 2 to 4. When we visited my grandmother in snowy Alsace, she used to serve us this delicious and filling breakfast, rich in fiber and fruity nutrients. It is still one of my favorite winter breakfasts, true baby food for adults. My grandmother usually served her oatmeal variation with freshly baked brioche or Kugelhopf, a wonderful cake with raisins and almonds that is one of the great specialties of Alsace. Today, I sometimes find it a filling meal unto itself, and I skip the bread. If I want a little more protein, I have a bite of cheese or some yogurt. Ingredients: 1 cup old-fashioned oatmeal, 2 1/3 cups water, pinch of salt, 1 medium apple, coarsely grated, 1/2 teaspoon lemon juice, 1/3 cup milk, 1/2 teaspoon butter. 1. Combine the oatmeal, water, and salt in a medium saucepan. Bring to a boil. 2. Add the grated apple and lemon juice and cook for about 5 minutes, stirring occasionally. 3. Add the milk and butter. Stir well and cook for 1 minute. Serve immediately, perhaps with a sprinkle of brown sugar or a drizzle of maple syrup. Grilled pineapple serves 4. Ingredients: 4 1 1/2 inch thick slices of pineapple, fresh and ripe, juice of 2 lemons, 2 teaspoons honey, freshly ground pepper. 1. Make crisscross slashes with a knife on each slice of pineapple to get a nice presentation after grilling. Broil until the pineapple turns a nice caramel color, but be careful not to burn. 2. In a small saucepan, boil the lemon juice and honey for 2 to 3 minutes. Let cool, add pepper to taste, and drizzle over the pineapple slices. Serve immediately as is, or with a scoop of verbena ice cream. If you serve this dessert at a weekend lunch after a big mixed salad, you can replace the ice cream with fresh goat cheese or ricotta. You won't have the sweet, juicy, peppery combination, but the peppery aspect will be more forthcoming, and the cheese-pineapple pairing is refreshingly different. 7. More recipes that will fool you. Seasonality: eating the best at its peak, and seasoning, the art of choosing and combining flavors to complement food, are vital for fighting off the food lover's worst enemy, not calories, but boredom. Eat the same thing in the same way time and again, and you'll need more just to achieve the same pleasure. Think of it as taste tolerance. Have just one taste experience as your dinner, the big bowl of pasta, a big piece of meat, and you are bound to eat too much as you seek satisfaction from volume instead of the interplay of flavor and texture that comes from a well-thought-out meal. Playing with seasonality and seasoning is something most French women excel at. Many must also balance career and family, so it's not that they have so much more time than other women to dream up new creations every week. They just have a few more tricks up their sleeves. Just as French women have an uncanny knack for using the same scarf to create a different effect by draping it over the head, neck, shoulders, or waist, in the kitchen, they master a few basic preparations and leave the rest to improvisation, the art of tweaking an old standby into seeming different. They do it by slightly altering the preparation or seasoning, by turning what is usually an entree into an appetizer, or by transforming lunch leftovers into something rather different for several later meals. It's all about manipulating how the 5 senses are meeting what is put before them, and it can be as simple as choosing the more unusual yellow tomato over the standard red varieties. Visual variety, color, and presentation are underestimated factors in food pleasure. But you must think in terms of all the senses when planning meals. They are the reason why freshness, quality, and other sensations dictate how we feel about our food. There are good and bad ways to fool yourself when it comes to eating. Many times, our foods are not what they seem. Take sugar. It's not just in desserts anymore. It used to be a trick to add a little to tomato sauce, but nowadays, most big assembly line restaurants consider it mandatory. The same sweetening trend may be observed with balsamic vinegar. 10 years ago, it was a rarity, as it should be, since true balsamic is scarce and expensive. But now that demand has soared, most restaurants freely use a cheap faux balsamic in which caramel and coloring conceal the absence of the flavors for which the real stuff is prized. Fat is another thing some restaurants lean on. If the ingredients aren't great, a bit more butter is a quick fix to make the dish taste better. Despite its reputation as a butter-rich cuisine, authentic French cooking these days actually uses relatively little fat, preferring to create taste with other elements. And we are even stingier with sugar. But we get away with it only because we start with quality ingredients. Fresh, vine-ripened tomatoes naturally contain all the sweetness you should desire. But you can't fake a good tomato. Find what's good and in season where you are, and work from there. Now, how do we fool ourselves in a good way? We still want to faire simple, keep it simple. When I order in restaurants, I favor complicated, labor-intensive dishes. I make a point, nevertheless, of asking the waiter how dishes are prepared. This simple form of interrogation requires no special expertise, but can save hundreds of hidden calories per meal. When I cook at home, however, as I do several times a week, I demand the most bang for the effort and the buck. Nothing delights me more than oohs and ahs over something literally thrown together with a few ingredients. The following recipes are drawn mostly from my family experience. In each, I aim to illustrate a way of eating simply but with satisfaction. I also indicate easy variations that can make the same dish seem very different or show how one dish can be used again as the basis for a subsequent meal. Cook once and eat for 3 days. It's a common principle. How you serve a dish matters greatly. Some things offer enough sensory stimulation to stand virtually on their own, at least as the day's lighter meal. These need only some little accompaniments, a bit of bread, say. Others are interesting enough to be starters only, whetting the appetite rather than answering it decisively. It matters whether or not you are serving the day's main meal. Again, in France, as in much of Europe, that's lunch. If you are having a full lunch with wine, which in France is sometimes employer-subsidized via restaurant vouchers, ah, la France. Consider soups, our most versatile type of food. You might have a cup-size serving, nowadays more often served in a small well on a dinner plate, as the appetizer or between appetizer and entree. Remember, the French bourgeois meal, as formalized in the 18th century, was potage, hors d'oeuvre, relevé de potage, entrée, rôti, entremets, dessert, café, pousse-café. Few of us eat so many courses today. If you're planning a big lunch, you might have a bowl of soup as the main part of dinner. This can be served with some bread and a bit of cheese. If dinner is the big meal, do soup or salad for lunch. Whether we eat the main meal of the day as lunch or dinner, the other meal is always a more modest affair. Soups and appetizers. Each of these dishes can be used two ways. If it's the main event of the day's lighter meal, the portion can be increased somewhat. But if it's to be an appetizer for the day's main meal, always err on the side of too little. Many forget the literal meaning of appetizer. Satisfaction is not a feeling you should be approaching after the first course of your day's main meal. Soupe aux légumes de maman serves 8 to 12. In the summer, we eat our soups chilled. In the winter, piping hot. The theory goes that the French, who eat soup up to 5 times a week for dinner, eat better and less. We have a decent breakfast, a full lunch, and a less elaborate but no less flavorful dinner. The evening soup eater tends to consume less fat and less food overall, feeling satiated through the night, after which she needs a real meal on rising to get her through the morning. We had a dozen variations on the vegetable soup theme, based on whatever was growing in the garden that season. My mother typically made vegetable soup on Thursdays for lunch, and as she had more time to cook that day, she would serve the soup with both potato pancakes, for the ladies in the family, and apple pancakes, which the men preferred. Don't ask. My mother was always indulging the boys. Her soup was judged the best, according to my aunts and cousins, because of her final touches. Ingredients: 2 potatoes, 1 onion, peeled and quartered, 2 garlic cloves, peeled, salt and freshly ground pepper, 4 leeks, white and tender green parts, 1/2 small cabbage, 3 celery ribs, 2 turnips, 4 carrots, 4 tablespoons butter, 2 cups canned, whole or chopped, tomatoes, 2 sprigs of parsley, 2 sprigs of fresh thyme, 2 bay leaves. 1. Peel, wash, and roughly slice the potatoes. Place in a small pot and add water to cover. Add the quartered onion, garlic, salt, and pepper. Bring to a boil, reduce the heat, and simmer till tender, about 10 minutes. Drain and set aside. 2. Wash the remaining vegetables, except the tomatoes, and slice or dice them. Melt the 4 tablespoons of butter in a 15-quart stock pot and sweat the vegetables, stirring often. 5 minutes. This procedure eliminates the more aggressive aromas of fresh vegetables. 3. Add the tomatoes, potatoes, onion and garlic, and water to cover. Stir in the parsley, thyme, and bay leaves, and continue to cook until all the vegetables are tender. Remove the bay leaves. Drain the vegetables, reserving the cooking liquid. 4. Puree the drained vegetables in a food mill, using the fine grating disc. Thin the soup with the reserved cooking liquid to the consistency you like. It shouldn't be too watery or too thick. 5. Correct the seasoning and add fresh herbs of your choice. Optional finishing tricks. Ingredients: 1 onion, peeled and thinly sliced, 1 tablespoon butter, 4 tablespoons crème fraîche, pinch of freshly grated nutmeg, salt and freshly ground pepper. Bring the soup to a boil. In a skillet, fry the thinly sliced onion in 1 tablespoon butter. Add to the soup. Add the crème fraîche, nutmeg, and salt to taste. Add pepper and serve immediately. Alternatively, before putting the vegetables through the food mill, reserve 2 cups and add them to the soup just before serving. The crunchy vegetables will contrast with the velvety soup and will also force you to eat more slowly and thus satisfy you with less. This was the evening version. The smooth lunch variant was accompanied with Mother's yummy pancakes. You can also play a bit with different spices. Try ground cloves, cumin, or turmeric. Second service. Mother would save half of the soup before the finishing touch and serve it 2 days later, adding a sausage that she would sauté in a bit of oil and then stir into the soup. Voilà! Another simple, filling, and nutritious evening meal made in a mere 15 minutes. Cold beet and yogurt summer soup. Serves 4. This cold, thick soup was always a crowd pleaser at my cousin's home in Provence. Easy to prepare, easy to serve. It's refreshing but also filling, with the yogurt furnishing protein and eliminating the need for a meat stock and even fish or meat later in the meal. Not only are the beets, with a season running from spring to fall, rich in fiber, but their brilliant color arrests the eyes. This recipe can be used as a summer dinner appetizer or as a main course at lunch. Ingredients: 4 medium beets, boiled till tender, then peeled and quartered. 2 cups yogurt. Recipe to follow: 2 shallots, peeled and minced. Dash of cumin. Salt and freshly ground pepper. 1 tablespoon minced fresh dill. 1. Mix the beets. They should be chunks that are a bit chewy and take a little more time to eat than if pureed, with the yogurt, shallots, cumin, salt, and pepper to taste. Refrigerate for 3 to 4 hours. 2. Serve the beets chilled in individual bowls and sprinkle with the dill. Served with a slice of bread and fruit, strawberries or melon for dessert, this soup makes an excellent summer lunch. Celery root, remoulade, serves 4. Celery root is used as the coleslaw of French cuisine, though it has a distinctive taste quite different from cabbage. Every French family and every decent bistro seems to have a different recipe. Often, celery root remoulade is served along with a dish of grated carrots in a salad dressing. These raw veggies are a typical autumn or winter dish for an easy, delicious starter or colorful lunch en famille. Cooked celery root can also be used in soup, mixed with potatoes, for a lovely, more refined mash. Braised, the root, also known as celeriac, makes an excellent accompaniment for duck and game. Whenever we ate it raw, we always ate the carrots first and ended with the silky celery root. Ingredients: 1 teaspoon mustard, 1 tablespoon red wine vinegar, 1 tablespoon lemon juice, 1 tablespoon minced parsley, 1 tablespoon minced cornichons, salt and freshly ground pepper, 1/2 cup mayonnaise, 1 pound celery root, peeled, quartered, and shredded in a food processor, tossed with 1 teaspoon lemon juice to prevent discoloration. 1. In a bowl, create the remoulade dressing by mixing the mustard, vinegar, lemon juice, parsley, and cornichons. Season with salt and pepper to taste. 2. Mix in the mayonnaise and then the shredded celery root. Season to taste and refrigerate. 3. Take the celery root out of the refrigerator 20 minutes before serving and toss to fluff up. Serve with a slice of country bread. You can substitute some mixed herbs or fresh chervil and tarragon for the parsley, but then it will no longer be a classic version. Lentil soup serves 4. For some reason, as kids, we decided we didn't like lentils, but we loved leeks and sausages. So Tante Berta devised this trick to fool us. Ingredients: 10 ounces lentils, 4 ounces leeks, white part only, washed and minced, 4 ounces celery, washed and minced, 4 ounces carrots, washed and minced, 1 onion, studded with a clove, 1 bay leaf, salt and freshly ground pepper, 4 Strasbourg sausages, high-quality hot dogs, 2 tablespoons butter, 2 tablespoons flour. 1. Pour the lentils in a stock pot and add 3 quarts water. Bring to a boil. 2. Add all the vegetables and seasonings. Cook for 1 hour. 3. At the end of the cooking time, slice the sausages into thick pieces and sauté in 1 tablespoon of the butter. Add to the lentils. Melt the remaining 1 tablespoon butter with the flour and add to the soup to thicken. Taste and correct the seasoning before serving. Fingerlings and caviar serves 4. Potatoes in France are serious business. There is a type for fries, another for mashing, one for roasting, and so on. It is nothing to see a dozen varieties for sale at a market. We would buy them in large bags and store them in the cellar. The only type we grew in the garden was the delicious Charlotte, a small, succulent variety with the unique taste and firm flesh that Mother claimed suited caviar best. Caviar is pricey, but a little can really dress up some potatoes, especially for sudden guests. You can substitute salmon roe, domestic caviar, or simply minced chives. Ingredients: 4 potatoes, fingerlings as an alternative to the French charlottes, 6 ounces crème fraîche, salt and freshly ground pepper, 4 ounces caviar. 1. Rinse the potatoes and cook in lightly salted water until cooked but not mushy. Drain and cut into 1-inch slices. 2. Season the crème fraîche to taste with the salt and pepper and dab on each potato slice. Garnish with the caviar. Serve immediately. Ratatouille serves 12. Another French classic, as interpreted by my mother, based on a recipe from cousin André in Aix-en-Provence, is something I still make today in the summer, when the variety of suitable vegetables is greatest. I can get 3 meals out of it. With almost no fat, the ratatouille seems rich, with the juice coming from the vegetables themselves. To get the most flavors, slow cooking is a must. Ingredients: 3 pounds tomatoes, 3 pounds zucchini, 3 pounds eggplant, 12 garlic cloves, 1 bunch of parsley and or basil, salt and freshly ground pepper, 2 tablespoons extra virgin olive oil, freshly chopped parsley or basil for garnish. The first version is served as a soup at room temperature. 1. Use an equal amount of tomatoes, zucchini, and eggplant. Wash and cut into thick slices. 2. Using a large stock pot, make layers, starting with the eggplant, and then the tomatoes, and finally the zucchini. Repeat until the pot is filled almost to the brim. Add some garlic cloves and parsley sprigs between the layers. Season with salt and pepper. 3. Cover and cook over very low heat until the vegetables are tender, approximately 2 to 2.5 hours. 4. Let cool and serve 20 minutes later. Use soup bowls, since at this stage the ratatouille is more of a soup than a stew, with the liquid being mostly water from the veggies. Correct the seasoning and add a dash of extra virgin olive oil and lots of freshly chopped parsley or basil or both. The second version uses the leftovers as accompaniment to chicken or meat. 1. Warm up 2 tablespoons of olive oil and add the leftover ratatouille vegetables drained of their liquid, which can be reheated later and drunk lukewarm. 2. Cook over low to medium heat until the veggies have thickened. 3. Optional: add 1/2 cup of grated cheese, Comté, Parmesan, or any variety you like. The third version uses the leftover ratatouille from the second version as a pizza topping. It makes a good lunch or starter. 1. Buy or make pizza dough with water, flour, yeast, and salt. 2. Beat 1 egg into the leftover ratatouille vegetables, a batch without the optional cheese from the second version. 3. Spread the vegetable egg mixture as a pizza topping on the pizza dough. 4. Add some freshly grated Parmesan and bake like a regular pizza. Main courses. The name main course itself suggests one of the problems with the American notion of a meal. A main dish seems to be defined as the thing you have the most of. But eating a lot of any one element of a meal can be surprisingly less satisfying than eating equal portions of all things. As a result, the latter way is more weight-friendly. The key is to keep your eyes, your mouth, and your nose, your mind, entertained. A progression of food-friendly stimulation will reward you with contentment. Zucchini flour omelet serves 4. It never fails. During late spring, early summer, my shopping list for the open-air market in Manhattan's Union Square always includes zucchini flowers. I buy a few dozen, and invariably, a stranger in line asks what I do with them. It seems few people know, which perhaps explains why these vegetable flowers are so cheap. French and Italian women know lots of uses for them. I take them home for lunchtime omelets, a simple, balanced meal, yet impressive enough for entertaining. Ingredients: 16 zucchini flowers, 10 eggs, 1/4 cup water, salt and freshly ground pepper, 1 tablespoon butter, 1 cup fresh goat cheese or fresh ricotta, fresh herbs for garnish. 1. Wash the zucchini flowers and pat dry. 2. Beat together the eggs and water. Add the zucchini flowers to the egg mixture. Season with salt and pepper. 3. Melt the butter in a nonstick frying pan, and when piping hot, add the zucchini egg mixture. After a few minutes, when the eggs start setting, add the pieces of cheese all around. Continue to cook, but don't let the omelet get dry. Stop the cooking when it is still a bit runny. Garnish with fresh herbs and serve immediately. Endive with ham, without bechamel sauce. Serves 4. This was another typical winter dish, whether for lunch on Saturday or dinner any night of the week, as Mother knew we would get our vegetables, protein, and fat all in one dish that was easy and not as costly to make as most other fish or meat dishes. And we all loved it. The sauce is something my mother called bechamel du sou, compared with the classic bechamel sauce. This quick version, made with tomato sauce, is lighter and more digestible. A salad and piece of fruit complete the meal. Ingredients: 4 Belgian endives, salt, 4 slices of low salt-boiled ham, 2 cups tomato sauce, 2 ounces Swiss cheese diced, 2 ounces Parmesan cheese, 1 tablespoon butter. 1. Rinse the endives, cut bottoms, and cook in slightly salted water until tender. Drain. 2. Preheat the oven to 375 degrees. Wrap a slice of ham around each endive. Place in a baking dish. Pour the tomato sauce over the endive. Sprinkle the cheese on top and dot with the butter. 3. Put the gratin in the oven and bake for 20 minutes. Finish with 1 minute under the broiler to give it a nice brown top. Serve warm with country bread and a simple green salad. In springtime, you can prepare a similar dish using seasonal asparagus. You'll need about 5 asparagus stalks, enough to approximate the girth of the endive, per slice of ham. Pork chops with apples. Serves 4. We had lots of apple trees of many varieties in our orchards, and the supply would last for the whole winter. Mostly, I had them for a snack or in a dessert, as in Dr. Miracle's apple tart without dough. But here's one use in a main course that's a winner. It's incredibly easy, yet nutritionally complete. I rather love mixing the sweet carb with the fat and protein in delicious defiance of current diet ideology. Ingredients: 4 medium pork chops. You can substitute veal chops if you prefer. 4 whole cloves. 1/2 cup dry white wine or vermouth. 4 celery leaves. 2 bay leaves. 4 celery stalks, washed and finely diced. 1 tablespoon butter. 2 apples, cored and coarsely sliced. 1 tablespoon brown sugar. 4 ounces Swiss or Jarlsberg cheese, coarsely grated. 1. Preheat the oven to 375 degrees. Butter a baking pan and place the pork chops in it. 2. Press a clove into each chop. Add the white wine, celery leaves, and bay leaves, and put the pan in the preheated oven. Bake the chops for 30 minutes. 3. While the pork chops are baking, in a frying pan, sauté the diced celery in the butter for 5 minutes, and then add the sliced apples and sprinkle with the brown sugar. Continue cooking over very low heat for 10 minutes, or until the apples are tender but not mushy. 4. Finish the pork chops by removing the bay and celery leaves and sprinkling the cheese over the top of each chop. Baste and then broil for a few minutes to brown the top. 5. Serve the celery-apple mixture on the plate as an accompaniment to the pork chops. Use a few spoons of pan juices to further flavor the celery-apple mixture. To round out this meal, you can start with a consommé and end with a custard. Snapper with almonds serves 4. I didn't much care for fish when I was growing up, but I loved nuts. My mother knew both were essential for good nutrition, so she invented this way of slipping in the fish. Ingredients: 1/2 cup toasted sliced almonds, 2 tablespoons olive oil, 2 tablespoons butter, 4 snapper fillets, monkfish, halibut, or cod works too, with skin, about 4 ounces each, salt and freshly ground pepper, juice of 1 lemon, 1/2 cup chopped parsley. 1. In a non-stick frying pan, toast the almonds over medium heat. Set aside. 2. Warm the olive oil and butter in the frying pan. Add the snapper skin side up. Season with salt and pepper. Cook 4 minutes on each side. Transfer the fish to a warm serving plate and cover loosely with foil. 3. Add the lemon juice to the pan and whisk to blend with the pan juices. Pour over fillets, add the chopped parsley, and sprinkle with the toasted almonds. Serve immediately. Duck breasts à la Gascon serves 4. We rarely ate only duck breasts at home because, like most people, we generally purchased an entire duck and prepared our family version of roast duck. But my Uncle Charles came up with another recipe for his spa customers, using the relatively lean meat of the breasts only, the maigret, avoiding oil or butter in the preparation, and relying on the dry marinade for extra flavor. Calling it Gascon was a subtle way of fooling his guests. Most were wealthy Parisians who had never set foot in Gascony, a region in the southwest of France known for its ducks and geese, and, naturellement, great duck dishes. So before tasting even a morsel of this relatively light preparation, they were psychologically primed for the heights of Gascon delicacy. Ingredients: pinch of coarse salt, pinch of crumbled dried bay leaves, pinch of crumbled dried thyme leaves, 1 teaspoon chopped parsley, 2 garlic cloves peeled and sliced, 1/2 teaspoon finely diced shallot, 8 black peppercorns coarsely crushed, 4 duck maigret breasts. 1. In a large baking pan, mix the salt, bay leaves, thyme, parsley, garlic, shallot, and peppercorns. Roll the maigret in the mixture and spread them out in the pan skin side up. 2. Cover with plastic wrap and refrigerate the breasts for 24 hours, turning them once. 3. Remove the maigret from the marinade. Wipe or rinse the maigret to remove excess seasoning. Pat them dry with paper towels. Discard the marinade. Arrange the breasts skin side down on a broiler rack and place under the broiler 4 inches away from the heat. Broil 2 minutes. Turn them over and broil 3 to 4 minutes. Depending on the size and thickness of the maigret, the broiling time may need to be increased. The maigret should be medium rare. 4. Transfer the maigret to a carving board and let rest 2 to 3 minutes. Thinly slice the breast meat crosswise on the bias and serve. Salad of duck à l'orange serves 4. Use leftovers from the duck à la Gascon recipe that have been refrigerated. Ingredients: 2 seedless oranges, 1 teaspoon Dijon mustard, 3 tablespoons red wine vinegar, 6 tablespoons olive oil, plus additional for drizzling, 1/2 pound salad greens, mesclun mixed with arugula or red oak lettuce with frisée, 2 teaspoons minced shallots, 1/2 pound green beans, trimmed and blanched, 2 cooked maigret breasts. Bring to room temperature while you prepare the salad. 1. Peel the oranges. Cut off the skin and white pith. Slice off and remove the membrane that separates the wedges. 2. Make the dressing by mixing the Dijon mustard with the red wine vinegar and the olive oil. 3. Toss the salad greens, shallots, green beans, and orange slices with the dressing. Spoon onto individual plates. 4. Cut the duck breasts on the bias into 1/2 inch strips and arrange on the salad greens. Drizzle some olive oil on the duck breasts. Serve with a slice of olive bread. Tagliatelle with lemon serves 4. Life without pasta? Perish the thought. It's not a French thing, per se, potatoes being the more ubiquitous starch of choice. But in Alsace, noodles are served with lots of dishes, from fish to game, mostly with heavy sauces, somewhat like those from the Piedmont region of Italy. We had pasta a few times a month when I was a kid, but we tended to favor the lighter, more intensely flavored preparations, like this cream and lemon combination Tante Caroline developed. She considered it a perfect lunch staple, accompanied by a salad and piece of fruit. Her daughter, Louise, tells me it's still very popular with all the kids. Pay attention to the portions. Ingredients: 12 ounces tagliatelle, 4 lemons, 1 tablespoon olive oil, 6 ounces crème fraîche, 4 ounces Parmesan cheese, salt and freshly ground pepper. 1. Cook the tagliatelle in boiling salted water until al dente. Drain. 2. While the pasta is cooking, grate the zest of lemons and squeeze and reserve the juice of 1 lemon. 3. In a saucepan, warm up the olive oil, add the zest, and cook over low flame for 2 minutes. Add the crème fraîche and bring to a boil. Pour in the reserved lemon juice and bring to a boil again. 4. When the cream starts to thicken, add the Parmesan, season to taste, mix well, and cook for another minute. Add the drained pasta and toss to mix. Serve immediately. Pasta is good for you, but not eaten as in America as a main dish in huge portions. Italians have it as a first or second course before the main course. Don't imagine you'll lose weight eating a big bowl with a dull tomato sauce. You'll never reach contentment. Add some fresh ricotta, a few pieces of tuna or veal or any meat, and less will seem like more. The French love pasta, but they love it with less fat. Among the standard preparations are a tomato coulis with onion and thyme, or a basil sauce with garlic and a few pine nuts. Each includes 1 tablespoon of olive oil per person, and the dish is further moistened with 2 to 3 tablespoons of the pasta water. Then a dusting of Parmesan, sparingly, as in Italy. Net intake is about 3 ounces per person, but followed by fish or meat. Desserts. The French seem to have a broader notion of dessert than Americans do. American desserts tend to be rich and heavy, frequently defeating the goals of balance and eating in moderation. They are also much sweeter on average, which is very much a matter of conditioned expectation. In France, we would not have such a dessert following other rich courses. It's more appropriate when the preceding fare is lighter. By the same token, not having room for dessert would suggest that the preceding parts of the meal have been too large or too rich. In any case, forcing dessert on a full stomach is never a good idea. Balance your dessert with what comes before, and develop a taste for things that aren't super sweet, like cheese and fruit. The elaborate pastries, including my beloved millefeuille, are eaten more as occasional tea cakes than at the end of a meal. When it comes to dessert, permit me to offer two restaurant tactics. The first you probably know, sharing, especially ordering one for two. But if everyone's ordering her own and you don't want to be a drag, try this. Take a few bites, very slowly, until others are almost done. Then tell a story or talk to your neighbor. While you're talking, others keep eating. Meanwhile, discreetly put your utensils in the 5 o'clock done position. When the server comes to collect your plate, everyone will still be listening to your story and won't notice your subtle moderation. I have done this so many times, and it always works. Poached pears, serves 4. Ingredients: 2 cups Muscat Beurre de Venise, 1/2 cup sugar, 2 tablespoons lemon juice, 4 Bosque pears, peeled, cored, and halved, 4 scoops of vanilla ice cream. 1. In a heavy saucepan, bring the wine and sugar to a boil. Lower the heat and simmer for 5 more minutes. 2. Add the lemon juice and pears. Cook for 10 minutes over medium to low flame. Cool and refrigerate. 3. Bring the pears to room temperature before serving. Add 1 scoop of vanilla ice cream to each serving. For extra luxury, serve each pear in a little pool of melted dark chocolate. Baked apples, serves 4. In the good old days, autumn meant apples and nuts piling up from our orchard. Luckily, my mother knew countless ways of using them. It's one of the true pleasures of the season, biting into a fresh apple before it's had a chance to dehydrate or grow mealy. Fortunately, distribution of apples in season has greatly improved in the United States, and good apples move fast enough that even a better supermarket may prove a good source. The crunch of a good apple following a meal may furnish just the right counterpoint to the preceding textures. Remember, it's not just our stomach, but our mouth too that we need to satisfy. Sometimes compulsive eating is more a nervous urge simply to ingest and to chew than actual hunger. And they are easy on the calorie count. As kids, we always preferred cooked apples to raw, so especially on those days when she was serving a soup or entree less popular with the kids, my mother made sure to motivate us with this dessert, which seemed much more luxurious than it was. She'd also make delicious applesauce that was served as a little snack when we came back from school. Ingredients: 1/3 cup chopped walnuts, 4 apples, Cortland, Golden Delicious, or Rome Beauty, 4 teaspoons butter, 4 teaspoons sugar mixed with 1/2 teaspoon cinnamon, 2 tablespoons water. 1. Place the walnuts on a baking sheet and toast them in a 250-degree oven for about 5 minutes until they are fragrant. Set aside. 2. Wash and core the apples. Place them in a baking dish. Combine the butter, sugar-cinnamon mixture, and toasted walnuts. 3. Fill the cavity of each apple with the mixture, dividing it evenly among the 4 apples. Pour the water into the bottom of the baking dish. 4. Bake the apples at 375 degrees for 30 minutes. Serve warm. You can make the dessert more festive by pouring 1 teaspoon of heavy cream over each apple just before serving, garnishing with a sprig of mint for color, or placing an edible flower on the side. Floating island with a dose of cocoa powder, serves 4 to 6. The French rarely eat eggs for breakfast and don't drink milk by itself, but we consume plenty of both, mostly in sauces and desserts. Of course, we eat eggs in omelets, but these are served for lunch or dinner. In one classic dessert, les œufs à la neige, eggs with snow, known in restaurants by the fancier name île flottante, floating island, we get plenty of eggs, milk, protein, and fat with limited carbohydrates. And as rich desserts go, this one isn't so fattening because much of the egg component is egg white. You'll find it attractive, delectable, and easy. My mother would often make it in the evening and serve it the next day at lunch. Since it was among my favorite desserts, when I'd see her prepare it, I knew that the next day's menu would include something good for me that I did not like. "Eat it all, and you can have dessert," she'd say. Several times a month, I was shamelessly bought with a floating island. Ingredients: 2.5 cups whole milk, 2/3 cup plus 1 tablespoon sugar, 1 teaspoon pure vanilla extract, 4 eggs, 1/4 teaspoon salt, cocoa powder for sprinkling. 1. Scald the milk in a large, heavy-bottomed saucepan. Add 1/3 cup of the sugar and the vanilla. Cover and remove from heat. 2. Separate the eggs and reserve the egg yolks in a mixing bowl. 3. In another bowl, beat the whites with the salt until foamy, and then gradually beat in the 1 tablespoon of sugar. Beat the egg whites to stiff peaks. An electric mixer is handy here. 4. Return the saucepan with milk to the heat and bring to a boil. Reduce the heat to low. 5. With a soup spoon, scoop out a mound of the egg whites and drop into the milk. Cook gently for 2 minutes and turn gently to cook the other side for 2 minutes. Remove and drain on a dry towel. Let cool, then cover and refrigerate on a plate until ready to serve. 6. In the bowl containing the egg yolks, gradually beat in the remaining 1/3 cup of sugar and continue beating for 2 to 3 minutes until the mixture is pale yellow and forms a ribbon. Gradually add the hot milk in a thin stream to slowly warm up the yolks and avoid scrambling them. Chill the custard in a serving bowl. 7. When ready to serve, place the poached egg whites on top of the custard. Provide a bowl of cocoa powder for each guest to sprinkle over the whites. We kids were allowed the dose of our dreams. When this dessert was served at our formal Sunday lunches to guests, my mother would add 1 tablespoon of rum to the custard and either drizzle caramel on the whites or grate over some dark chocolate. I preferred the latter, finding the caramel too sweet, as I still do. The yogurt element. Not all are created equal. Yogurt remains my secret weapon. Ever since Dr. Miracle first prescribed 2 servings a day, it's been a no-brainer snack and dessert. But full adoration did not bloom until I visited Crete. We did not eat much yogurt at home when I was growing up. We preferred Petit Suisse, a soft white cheese that we would sprinkle with cocoa powder. We did not drink raw milk either, except during the summers in the country at my grandmother's house. She kept cows, and every evening before going to bed, we had to drink un bol, the breakfast big bowl, of fresh milk, still warm from the source. At home, we also had our dairy requirement via custard, flan, crème anglaise, pudding, and all the warm, savory dishes, mostly served in winter, using milk as a cooked ingredient. Yogurt is actually better for you than any of these dairy products. Doctors typically recommend that patients on antibiotics, destroyers of intestinal flora, eat 1 serving with each meal. 1 gram of basic yogurt has something like 10 million live bacteria, Lactobacillus bulgaricus and Streptococcus thermophilus, vital to your digestive well-being. For me, yogurt took a little getting used to. The fruit and fillings didn't exist in those days. Given my diagnosed sweet tooth, the classic yaourt nature was not immediately a palatable substitute for dessert. So Dr. Miracle said I could add 1/2 teaspoon of honey or a sprinkle of wheat germ. In the spring, a moderately sweetened rhubarb compote spiked with cinnamon worked well, as did a mix of succulent strawberries or raspberries. There were days when I had nothing in my pantry to add, following his tip not to stock offenders, and that's when I started surrendering to the pleasures of plain yogurt. Nothing tastes quite like it, that combination of tartness and creaminess. While still a student, I would travel in Greece on $5 a day during the summer. I had studied modern Greek, so I liked to stay at homes and practice speaking with natives. The furnishings were Spartan, rarely more than a shower and a bed, and more often a mattress laid on the terrace roof, as this was the high season and many families would take in several foreign students. Since I spoke the language, however, the astonished family often spoiled me with a bed. Sometimes they wouldn't even charge me, but always they would invite me into their kitchen in the morning for a glass of water, a demitasse of that very strong Greek coffee, called Turkish in most other places, and a yogurt. One summer in Crete, I stayed with the kindly and petite wife of a sea captain. She told me that when he was away, she practically lived on yogurt and fruit, except for a small piece of fish and some greens at dinner. Skipping the cheap, greasy tavernas, I started going to the tiny grocery stores near the beach and would buy my lunch, yogurt and a peach. The peaches were perfectly in season, luscious, and with an almost liquory juiciness. After 10 days following her program, walking and swimming each day, I left Crete floating in my clothes. I later discovered I had lost 3 pounds, yet have rarely felt so pampered since. Of course, nothing equals a yogurt from Crete made with goat's milk. I've learned that the island's entire food chain is rich in alpha-linolenic acid, present in all the edible wild plants. Cretan women still pick various herbs and plants, and since the livestock feed themselves, poultry, eggs, and milk contain 2 or 3 times more of that beneficial nutrient. Even some French store-bought yogurt contains the host of undesirable ingredients you find in the American versions: artificial preservatives, colors, flavorings, sugar, and other sweeteners. So in Crete, I made sure to learn from the captain's wife how to make my own. It requires some starter, either a commercially available combination of live bacteria cultures or simply a spoonful of good store-bought yogurt, provided it contains active cultures, and a yogurt machine, one of the best minor investments I've ever made. Here is the recipe, quick and easy. The machine does the work. Homemade yogurt with a yogurt maker. Ingredients: 1 quart whole or 2% milk, 1 tablespoon plain yogurt as a starter, or 1 tablespoon of a commercial starter culture, available at natural food stores. Yogurt maker with cooking thermometer. I use the Donvier brand with 8 jars. 1. Warm up the milk in a saucepan over medium-low heat until bubbles appear around the edge and steam rises from the surface. Remove the saucepan from heat and insert a thermometer stirrer. When the temperature reaches 110 to 115 degrees, add the starter to one of the jars. Add some of the heated milk and stir until well blended. Pour the mixture back into the saucepan, a little at a time, stirring well. 2. Fill all 8 jars, cover securely with lids, and place the jars into the machine, which is really a temperature-controlled warmer, and follow the cooking instructions. It will take 6 to 10 hours, easy to do overnight, depending on the tartness and firmness desired. 3. When done, chill the jars in the refrigerator for a few hours before serving. You can keep the yogurt for up to 2 weeks in the fridge. If you don't want to invest in a yogurt maker, here's a foolproof, centuries-old recipe of which I was recently reminded by a taxi driver on the Greek island of Mykonos. Greek taxi drivers are something else. Extroverted, educated, multilingual, knowledgeable, memorable, and opinionated. I forget what question we had asked him, but it launched him on a discourse about life, gardening, importing ladybugs from Holland, family, hotels, the comparative merits of restaurants on the island, and eventually, yogurt. Homemade yogurt without a yogurt maker. Ingredients: 1 quart whole or 2% milk, 1 to 2 tablespoons plain yogurt as a starter, or 1 to 2 tablespoons of a commercial starter culture, available at natural food stores. 1. Warm up the milk in a saucepan over medium-low heat until bubbles appear around the edge and steam rises from the surface. 2. Pour the warm milk into a large bowl to cool until the temperature reaches 110 to 115 degrees on a cooking thermometer. If you don't have a thermometer, do what the locals do. The temperature is correct when you can keep your index finger in the warm milk for 20 seconds. 3. Put the starter in a small bowl, add some of the heated milk, and stir until well blended. Return the mixture to the large bowl, a third at a time, making sure to stir and blend well after each addition. End with a final stir, making sure all is well blended. Cover with a heavy towel, and keep in a warm place 6 to 8 hours or overnight. A gas oven with a pilot light is fine, or placing a saucepan of hot water in the oven to raise the temperature will help if your home is not warm enough. 4. When set, cover the bowl with plastic wrap and refrigerate for 8 hours before serving. If thicker yogurt is desired, empty chilled yogurt in a muslin bag or cheesecloth, suspend over a bowl, and drain. 8. Liquid assets, eau de vie. Scarcely anyone who has gone to American schools hasn't learned that water is the essence of life. Recently, we spent close to $1 billion to discover whether or not there was ever water on Mars. Why? Because without water, life as we know it could never have existed there, and we wouldn't long exist here on Earth if we quit drinking. Water makes up 70% of our body weight, 80% of our blood, 70% of our lean muscle, and a whopping 85% of our gray matter, which perhaps suggests why dehydrated people become delirious long before their other bodily functions give out. Given these facts, which are far more certain than most scientific claims made in diet books, it's something of a mystery why Americans don't drink more water. Particularly since, as any French woman knows, it's a powerful way of controlling one's weight, virtually without sacrifice. In fact, if you simply drank 4 or 5 more glasses per